Broadcasting from the Taz and Lake Lodge Studios.
Sporting Journal Radio.
Sporting Journal Radio. The Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning into this station right here. If you're in Rochester listening, thank you for joining us for the first time. We're debuting this week on Minnesota 97.5 in Rochester. Thank you, station. Thank you, listeners. We're going to go to the Netherlands again to talk about fishing for big pike and how fish are managed over there compared to how they're managed here in the United States. We'll talk about the differences with Sean Witt. He catches some giant fish. Check him out, White Label Fishing on YouTube or Sean Witt NL on Instagram. We'll talk to Brandon Shad for you Rochester listeners down there about the outdoor opportunities around the Rochester area. We'll hear from Doug Lear about whooping cranes in North Dakota. And we've also got Joe Henry with a Lake of the Woods update for us here in just a second. We're going to talk about the Minnesota Governor's fishing opener and what's going on there. This week's show is brought to you by Tazen Lake Lodge in Northwest Saskatchewan. We're hoping we can travel to Saskatchewan this summer. We're still planning on it. TazenLake.com has all the details. We just did a new Tazen TV episode you can see on our Tazen Lake Lodge YouTube channel. Show is also brought to you by Haybale Heights Campground Resort on Devil's Lake. And thankfully, all this business is going on during the transition time there up at Devil's Lake. Still gearing up for summer guided fishing. Plan your trip to Devil's Lake at haybaleheights.com. And of course, brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism, lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Plan your trip this summer up to Lake of the Woods. We'll talk to Joe Henry about the opener up there at Lake of the Woods here in just a second. Show is, of course, brought to you by Prairie Sportsman as well. Another new episode of Prairie Sportsman taking place this Sunday night at 7:30 p.m. on Pioneer PBS, otherwise airing all over the state on different PBS channels. Well, I saw Wisconsin put out a new framework for their waterfowl regulations for the next 5 years, and included a regular season opener for ducks in October for the southern part of the state. Curious to see what Minnesota is going to do. Of course, I've been a big proponent of pushing back the regular season opener, and by implementing a teal season in September, we can have it both ways. Talked to Steve Kortz about it a little bit. Not sure when Minnesota is going to make some decisions, but he did say they discussed the teal season with the commissioner, and they're going to bring it up for a public input in May. So if you want to see a teal season and the potential for moving back the regular season duck season start, look for that public input survey coming out in May. Now we're going to go up to Lake of the Woods and check in with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, some fishing news in the past week about the governor's fishing opener. You know, I usually go every year. We usually film for Prairie Sportsman. I was excited to get up and work with Eric Osberg again up around that Otter Tail, Fergus Falls area there. They canceled it, but some people got a little worried that maybe fishing was going to be canceled, but that's not the case.
Not at all. No. So, you know, what they did is, the governor's fishing opener is an event. It's an event that's part of the state of Minnesota. It's part of the hoopla of opening day of fishing. And it's obviously where the governor goes out with a whole bunch of media. And for the couple days before the opener, the media are doing interviews. And we're talking about the opener and all the different things that go along with it. And then, of course, you have opening fishing where the governor and the lieutenant governor and some other politicians go fishing and stuff. And it's a great, great event. And this year it's going to be canceled now. Yeah. The opening of fishing on May 9th is not canceled. So everybody's going to be able to go out and fish as we see it now, right? It's just that event that's been formally canceled because, once again, you know, they can't predict whether, you know, social distancing will still be in effect or not, and, you know, all the different things that go along with it. Eric and Nick Leonard out there, you know, good guys, and it's my understanding they're going to push it back 12 months so that Otter Tail will take it in 2021 then, which, you know, Eric made a comment on the news, an interview I saw. He just said, hey, it gives us 12 more months to plan. And it's a great attitude.
Well, you can never have too much time to plan for an event like that, which, you know, it's a lot of work to do. And, you know, the opening of fishing is always a tradition for so many anglers in Minnesota. And the governor's opener has kind of become my tradition. You know, I've been doing it now for a number of years, and you see some of the same media people, and you see some of the same, you know, pro anglers. And it just becomes such a fun event to be a part of. And I always get to learn something new about a different part of the state, you know, wherever they host these events. Like last year, we did it down in Albert Lea, and I'd never I'd never even thought of Albert Lea as a walleye fishing destination. And we didn't hammer walleyes down there. We filmed it for Prairie Sportsman, but we did catch some. And what we learned are what's going on with the water quality down there and what's being done to change that a little bit. So we learned kind of a little bit more about how the fishery is managed. So it's always an interesting time for me for that governor's opener. So I'm going to miss that this year, but I'm glad I haven't done, I haven't fished up around Otter Tail for a number of years. So I was looking forward to get back up in that neck of the country as well. So it's always kind of fun to fish in different parts of the state, but the good news is that the opening of fishing is still on and people can go. Maybe I'll go to Lake of the Woods for the opener this year, Joe.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I can promise you this, that the when it's time, did you notice that, Brett? When it's time.
Right.
The walleyes are willing, ready, and able. And, you know, we got a good population of walleyes. We know we do. Some of the locals that live on the Rainy River that's way up. And, you know, the walleyes are there. We know the walleyes are there. We saw it this ice fishing season. And it's just going to be a matter of getting out there in May. And, you know, people will be fishing the river in May. People will be fishing the lake in May. And they'll be comparing notes and sizes. And it's going to be fun. We just have to look forward to the future.
Rainy River access is no change in the access openings or closures up there?
Yep, that's correct. You know, because of the COVID-19 and just really to protect everybody with social distancing and everything, you know, the DNR is making some pretty good statements. And one of the statements I heard him say recently is, hey, listen, you know, you can still get outdoors, still get out fishing and such, but get out fishing in your local area. We have to resist our traditions right now and resist our urges to travel, to hit some premier destinations like the Rainy River. And, you know, it's a bummer, but we're all in this thing together. Let's pull through this thing the right way so it doesn't spread. And it's going to behoove us down the road for sure.
Can't wait till it's over. Joe Henry, yep. Lake of the Woods Tourism. If people want to plan a trip to Lake of the Woods, they can plan it now and then go when this is over. Where can they find out the information?
You bet. Check out our website, and that is lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
One of the most endangered birds migrates through North Dakota every spring. Hi, this is Doug Lear with your weekly North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. Whooping cranes are in the midst of their spring migration, and sightings will increase as they make their way into and through North Dakota over the next several weeks. Anyone seeing these endangered birds as they move through the state is asked to report sightings so the birds can be tracked. Whooping cranes that do make their way through North Dakota each spring are part of a population of about 500 birds that are on their way from their wintering grounds at Aransas National Wildlife Refuge in Texas to their nesting grounds at Wood Buffalo National Park in Canada, a distance of about 2,500 miles. Whoopers stand about 5 feet tall and have a wingspan of about 7 feet from tip to tip. They are bright white with black wingtips, which are visible only when the wings are outspread. In flight, they extend their long necks straight forward, while their long, slender legs extend out behind the tail. Whooping cranes typically migrate singly or in groups of 2 to 3 birds and may be associated with sandhill cranes. Other white birds, such as snow geese, swans, and egrets, are often mistaken for whooping cranes. The most common misidentification is pelicans because their wingspan is similar and they tuck their pouch in flight, leaving a silhouette similar to a crane when viewed from below. Anyone sighting a hooper should not disturb them, but record the date, time, location, and the bird's activity. Observers should also look closely for and report colored bands, which may occur on one or both legs. Whooping cranes have been marked with colored leg bands to help determine their identity. Whooping crane sightings should be reported to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service offices at Lostwood or Audubon National Wildlife Refuges, the Game and Fish Department in Bismarck, or to local game wardens across the state. That is this week's North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. I'm biologist Doug Lear.
It's almost spring and soon the ice will be melting. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazzin Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazzinLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazzin Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fishing you've ever had in your life.
At TazzinLake.com. That's TazzinLake.com. Tazzin Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan.
Broadcasting from the Tazzin Lake Lodge studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for listening on this station right here. In fact, this weekend, we're debuting on Minnesota 97.5 FM in Rochester. So thank you, Rochester, for tuning in. Thank you, Minnesota 97.5, for picking up Minnesota Sporting Journal Radio. Maybe you're listening on one of the other stations on the network or streaming on demand on our website or listening to the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Well, since we're new in Rochester this weekend, I wanted to talk about what Rochester has to offer. Of course, when you think of southeastern Minnesota, you might think of big deer. You might think of Mississippi River fishing. I think of goose hunting a lot, of course, in the Rochester area, because that area is well known for some excellent waterfowl hunting opportunities. I want to find out what other opportunities are going on there, or just more about these outdoor opportunities that we have, especially right now with what's going on. If you need to do some social distancing in the outdoors in the Rochester area, we're going to talk about some of those opportunities. We have the Area Wildlife Supervisor out of Rochester, Brandon Chad, with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Brandon, thanks for coming on the show this week.
Hey, no problem, Brett.
How are you doing? Everything good?
Everything's good. We're getting a lot of good work done still, and working to provide services to our customers as needed. So everything's going great.
Yeah, how is the DNR, how is this whole situation affected working for the DNR?
Most staff are still working, so a limited number of staff performing essential services such as managing waterfall or water control structures on some of our lakes and impoundments are still reporting to work for some limited duty. A lot of us are working from home and telecommuting, but still doing a lot of good work, writing berm plans. This week I've been preparing a lot of seed mixes for some prairie restorations. And so we've still got a lot going on answering people's questions. We're all still available. So if you have questions, get in touch with us for sure. And we're still available for our customers. So,
I know this is a little off topic and you're probably not really prepared to answer this, but it seems like what's going to end up happening after this whole pandemic situation ends, I think everything's going to be a little bit different. I think people are finding out, I work from home a lot. Technology allows me to do what I do from, like, I'm recording this in my house right now, this radio show. It's amazing what you can do with technology. I think there's going to be a lot more people working from home in the future.
Yeah. And it's worked out pretty well for me. I'm still getting a lot of, like I said, a lot of great work done, and it's our IT departments have been working overtime to make sure that staff have all the resources that they need and have things available to them. So,
Brandon Chad, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about Rochester outdoor opportunities. So number one, when somebody comes up to you and says, "Oh, Rochester, I've always wanted to visit there. What can I do in the outdoors in Rochester?" What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to a lot of people's mind in Rochester and the rest of southeast Minnesota is white-tailed deer. In particular, big white-tailed deer. We have very good populations. We have a lot of public land, the Richard Doerr Forest. We have a lot of wildlife management areas. And we have really high deer densities. Most people know that we've also had some disease issues cropping up in the last couple of years with chronic wasting disease. But despite that, we still have a low prevalence of the disease. It has spread a little bit geographically, but you know, it's still a very low prevalence, and we still have some excellent hunting opportunities and some expanded opportunities and are available in the rest of the state for whitetails. So,
and we could definitely fill a whole show with chronic wasting disease and whitetail deer.
Oh, for sure, yep.
In Minnesota Southeast. We'll save that for another time right now. But is there, are the deer that are out there, I mean, where I'm at in Western Minnesota, I still haven't seen deer kind of returning to their, you know, starting to spread out again. It seems like they're starting to spread out a little bit, but they're still kind of grouped up. Are you seeing the same down there?
Yeah, we're seeing deer spread out some as things green up. This nice weather the past week or two has really helped that. You know, but a lot of the areas where we had issues with congregation over the winter along the rivers and things, you know, where we'd maybe been getting some complaints, those have kind of dried up, and we've been seeing deer out and about a little bit more. So I think we'll continue to see that in the weeks to come. So
we'll stay on the hunting theme for just a moment and switch to waterfowl right now. Rochester has been known for goose hunting for a long time. I know there's a lot of goose themed businesses in the town there in the city. I've heard rumors of potential changes to what you guys have the river, of course, that stays open. And then was there a power plant there?
Yeah. At one time there was a power plant. And that power plant has since shut down.
It did shut down. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And so, but we do have the river. And so we still do see, you know, overwintering waterfowl, you know, unless it gets too cold. But Rochester does have some fantastic goose hunting opportunities. And a lot of people may or may not know that giant Canada geese, the largest subspecies of Canada geese, were thought to be extinct at one time. And right. they were actually rediscovered in Rochester in 1962. And so, you know, geese and goose hunting in the Rochester area has got a long tradition. Most of the available opportunities are on private land. We don't have a lot of wetlands. And so as a result, a lot of the opportunities available are on private crop fields and things like that, but there can be some terrific opportunities there.
And of course, a lot of guide services down there and some pit rentals and things like that. So might have to spend a little bit of money, but there's opportunities there. How has it changed since the power plant closed?
You know, I think it's changed our overwintering population a little bit, but like you said, we still have the river. And so most years we still have open water, you know, and, you know, I think one thing that's changed is, you know, Canada geese in a lot of areas have gone from being something of a rarity, you know, decades ago to very abundant, or in some cases even overabundant.
Yeah.
And so I always try and remind people that, you know, even though they can cause problems today, you know, Canada geese really are a wildlife management success story.
Absolutely. So. And they're the best tasting nuisance out there. Some of the nuisance with the best tasting legs is what I like to tell people. And, So my sister lives in Rochester. I don't get over there as often as I probably should, but we did some filming for Prairie Sportsman down there last year, and I decided to go see my sister and her family for a couple of days, and my truck ended up breaking down, so I spent a couple extra days in Rochester while I was there. But I had the chance just to kind of tool around. I had some free time in the city there, and I came across a park, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but there were so many ducks and geese just hanging out there. And it was around this time of year, I believe. It was just full of birds, and it was kind of a neat opportunity just to get real close to waterfowl, you know, in the spring when they're all colored up and they're, you know, they're not really too spooky of humans, especially in the city like that. So I think that'd be a great opportunity for people right now if they want to get outdoors. I'm sure you got some areas like that around Rochester.
Yeah, we do. You know, I think you were probably thinking of Silver Lake Park, and that there's abundant waterfowl there. We do try and encourage people not to feed them.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of reasons, you know, besides nuisance behavior, that feeding waterfowl, it can actually lead to some health problems and stuff for them. But there's definitely some great places to see waterfowl and other birds and bird watching. If you want to get a little bit more adventurous, there's some great regional and county parks. Oxbow Park is nearby, Chester Woods. Be sure and check with the respective municipalities to make sure places like that are still open. you know, and that they don't have different hours or changes in service, you know, due to the current situation. If you're a little bit more adventurous, as I indicated before, we have some terrific public lands in Southeast Minnesota. The Door Memorial Forest, our state forest in the region, has got some, you know, expansive areas that are largely undeveloped, and you can get out there and do some bird watching and hiking. The Upper Mississippi National Wildlife Refuge, and we have a lot of wildlife management area lands as well. So probably the best known of which is Whitewater, but
Whitewater's a great place. Yeah, really cool.
No, it's a terrific place, and anything you could do in the outdoors, you could probably do there, I think. So
well, and people are trout fishing down there right now, aren't they?
Yep, I believe it's open for catch and release, but I'm not a fisheries manager, so be sure and consult your your regulations book on that. But even in addition to our state lands and the available federal lands, there's a pretty extensive network of aquatic management area, which is easement access along a lot of stream corridors that allow us for fishing and opportunities, and so and foot travel generally. And so there's quite a bit that's open to the public use in Southeast Minnesota.
Is there a place people can go online and see a list of some of those opportunities at all?
Yeah. So we have a terrific app on our website that's also available for use on your mobile device called the Recreation Compass. And that'll show a lot of our state lands and aquatic management areas and things like that. Also our website, our general DNR website would have a lot of this information available on it for people that are want to find out more.
Very cool. Brandon Shad, Area Wildlife Supervisor out of Rochester. I appreciate the time here on Sporting Journal Radio, giving some outdoor opportunity advice to our Rochester area listeners here to Sporting Journal Radio. New this week in Rochester on Minnesota 97.5. So thanks for tuning in and thanks for being on the show, and glad to hear everything is good for you down there. I wish you health and safety, of course, and can continue managing the outdoors successfully down there in the Rochester area, man.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up next on the show, we're going from Rochester, Minnesota to the Netherlands. It's a little bit of a leap right now. Since you can't travel, we're going to do it virtually through the radio airwaves for you. Our part two interview with Sean Witt, who catches just giant, giant fish over there in the Netherlands and also Sweden. We're going to talk to Sean next, again, here on Sporting Journal Radio. World-class fishing in a scenic, remote Saskatchewan location can be found at Tazon Lake Lodge. With lake trout catches nearing world record sizes, including a 47-inch by 35-inch giant estimated to be around 70 pounds. See the picture now at TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge will also put you on giant pike, and you can learn more about getting there at the Tazon Lake Lodge booth at the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis, April 2nd through the 5th, or go to TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner with Tourism Saskatchewan. If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are, and there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
It's almost spring and soon the ice will be melting. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's HayBaleHeights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio. Broadcasting from the Tazon Lake Lodge Studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the network, by demand, or subscribing to the podcast. Our guest now is part two of our interview with Sean Witt. He's a big fish angler from Europe, fishing in the Netherlands and also Sweden. You can see pictures of some of his big pike and links to videos at sportingjournalradio.com. Some huge fish over there that he's hooked into. And he joins us again this week to talk about big pike. And I grew up fishing for bass and pike here in Minnesota and Wisconsin. And while we do have some big northern pike waters, we have a lot of small ones. And in fact, in Minnesota, we have a lot of regulations where a lot of our lakes are filled with smaller pike. They call them hammer handles, or, you know, the 20 to 25 inch fish. They're more of a nuisance than anything. So our DNR here, our management organization, has put in special regulations on different lakes to try to balance out that population or grow some bigger northern pike. What's the management like for you guys on your fish over there? Do you have season closures? Do you have limits? Do many people eat fish over there?
I think about 20 years ago, the general sense was that everybody's needs to put back to pike, and that has a really huge impact on the pike population. And from my own experience, I've caught many pike. I've doubled or tripled, or even caught them more than four times certain pike. Sure. over a span of several years. The unique thing with pike, of course, is that you can identify them by their spots and their markings and even scars or stuff. And you can see them grow and thrive over the years, which is a really huge compliment. And we have certain fish that are so unique in their markings that we have a community that's actually tracking them and see how they're doing. And it's fun to see how they move around in the seasons, but always come back to particular spots in certain times of the year. So when it comes to water management, yeah, it's 100% catch and release. We do have some problems with Eastern European countries that come over here and take too many fish sometimes. But they're slowly learning and evolving as well, because in countries like Poland and other Eastern European countries, the sense of catch and release is becoming more and more of a reality there as well, which impacts their fisheries in a positive way as well.
So,
at the same time,
when you say 100% catch and release, that's mandatory or that's voluntary catch and release?
No, it's mandatory.
It is mandatory. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah, it's good. Zander, you can take a couple of home. Like, I think it's a limit of two Zander in a specific weight class per person. But for pike, yeah, it's 100% catch and release, which is good. And at the same time, we do have some commercial fishing going on, but it's not for consumption in the Netherlands, but we do export it to other countries in Europe. And that's actually a hot topic in the Netherlands as well, because we have a really good fishing system at the moment in the Netherlands with countries all over Europe coming to Netherlands to fish for pike. But it could be way better if the commercial fishing was getting a complete buyout as well, because it's only a small percentage of people that are actually benefiting from it in a financial way. It's usually small businesses, and they are trying to looking for a way out so we can financially compensate them, and the sport fishing industry in general can benefit from it as a whole. And that's a discussion that's going on at the moment for quite some years, and hopefully we'll see some progress in the coming weeks and months, because there are some talks going on with between the Sport Fishing Federation and the commercial fishermen that are still active in the fresh waters of the Netherlands.
Well, we know all about the fight of commercial fishing versus sport fishing here in Minnesota. There's been a number of different instances, some just commercial business fishing, some tribal netting that takes place that there are some people that take issue with. So that's definitely a tough battle. Sean Witt is our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's in the Netherlands. He's got giant pike and other fish, Zander, that they fish for over there. You can see his videos on YouTube, White Label Fishing. Follow him on Instagram, Sean Witt NL. And we're talking about big fish right now. And one lure in particular we've gotten into using the last couple of years for our big pike and big lake trout actually as well up in Saskatchewan. And those are those big Savage baits. And I see you're a Savage guy, and that's a popular hook for you to use over there too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's I think we started fishing with swim baits, like, I think 10 years ago, which usually were like custom built swim baits, quite expensive to use, and they didn't have line through system, which the Savage swim baits do have. And the line through system has definitely increased our hookup rate with those fish, and also your bait lasts longer, which is a really good benefit as well. But especially the bigger swim bait, like the 40 centimeter trout from Savage Gear, I don't know exactly what it is in inches, but
I'll do the math here.
Yeah, you do the math.
That's almost 16 inches.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's a big hook.
It's a big, big one. Yeah, it's hard to cast with those, but one step smaller. The 30 inch one, I think that's a 12 incher, I think. The 30 centimeter trout is something we cast a lot with as well. And we catch really big fish on it because we do believe strongly in using big baits to catch, you know, big do fish. Some. Yeah, it filters out the smaller ones. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
I believe
it's
the same thing.
To our success.
It's surprising just how big some of those baits, like that 40 centimeter. My gosh, that thing is huge. But you do catch big fish on it. And I think that 12 inch or that 30 centimeter, that was kind of the popular size for us. And we're generally trolling them. So we don't have to cast them too much. It's a little bit easier on all the gear, yeah. I think, trolling them. But man, have we caught big fish on those.
And also big lake trout, right?
Yeah, big lake. Yeah, and that's primarily what we're fishing for. We actually fish for lake trout more than pike. With those big Savage baits. And then when we cast for pike, a lot of times we'll use big spoons, some big crankbaits or big spinners, like an inline spinner, MEPS, yep. Or a Booker tail or something like that. Those have been very popular. And we will catch big pike on some of those Savage baits too, but we generally don't cast those. We'll troll more for trout than northern pike.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's something I really feel bummed out about, that we don't have those big lakers here in the Netherlands, because honestly, I would rather catch a big laker than a big muskie. Those lakers are so freaking cool. They look like a monster with the fat bellies, and this the markings, the color on them. It's, yeah, beautiful fish.
I think beautiful fish. Those markings on lake trout, I think, are just way cool. It's almost, you know, like it's not as... not as drastic as maybe the markings on an eel pout, but the lake trout get some of those markings on those big heads of theirs. And yeah, I think they're considered the Siskiwit lake trout, the big, fat, deep lake trout. There's just nothing like them. And, you know, we've got them in some of our great lakes here, and we've traveled to places like Chicago and Milwaukee, and guys will fish Lake Michigan, and they're more salmon guys, and they get mad when they hook into one of those big lake trout. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, they don't get them as big as we've gotten them up in Saskatchewan. When you hook into one, you know, a 50 pounder, one of those big things, I mean, they want to rip the rods right out of your hand. I'm completely hooked on lake trout, even stream trout, rainbow trout or brook trout. They're just such angry, aggressive fish. They're like northern pike a lot of times in attitude. They'll eat whatever they want. Even if they're full, they'll come and try to bite you just because they're angry. You know, you're making them mad one way or another. They're just such aggressive fish. They're fun to catch.
Do they fight well as well? I mean, how do they fight compared to a pike?
So it's a different fight. It's more of a vertical fight. You know, you're generally with those bigger ones, you're in deeper water, and it's like these big, we call them head bobs. So basically your rod is getting jerked straight down towards the water as they're trying to dive back down to the bottom and trying to bring you and your boat with you down to the bottom down there. So a lot of times you're fighting... you know, maybe it's like it'd be like fighting a walleye or a zander that's about 30 pounds heavier and has some more shoulders to it. It's got a little more weight. They're trying to get back down to the bottom and bring you with, basically. So it becomes this up and down vertical battle. And you got to have heavy gear. So I was going to ask you about the gear that you're using when it comes to fighting some of those big pike. I'm assuming you're using heavy rods, braided line, titanium leaders. What are you using over there?
You definitely need like a stiff rod, like a heavy rod to set the hook, especially when you're using big swim baits that are made out of soft material like rubber. I mean, the big Savage swim baits, pike sinking their teeth into the bait, and you have to set the hook, so you have to have some force to actually be able to have some hook penetration. I usually use 65 pound test line or even heavier, and just shut the drag completely. So the initial take is just all about setting the hook, and after that I will open up the drag to have some room to play the fish with, and have the option to let it run instead of ripping the hook out. And it's always finding a balance between opening the drag too much and have enough tension and not putting it too shut to create ripping the hook out or anything like that. When it comes to liters, I usually use fluorocarbon actually, but really thick fluorocarbon, like 1.2 millimeters fluorocarbon, usually 120 or 140 pound test.
Got to take a break. More with Sean Witt coming up here on Sporting Journal Radio. We'll talk about where else in the world and what species of fish Sean would like to fish for that he hasn't yet. More with Sean Witt next, Sporting Journal Radio.
If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazon Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazonLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazon Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fish you've ever had in your life.
At TazonLake.com. That's TazonLake.com.
Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan. If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
It's almost spring and soon the ice will be melting. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio. Broadcasting from the Tazon Lake Lodge studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
Sean Witt, our guest, he's in the Netherlands here on Sporting Journal Radio. Is there anywhere else in the world, I know you talked about wanting to fish for lake trout, is there any species or places you want to go that you haven't traveled to yet? So when the traveling becomes a little bit more easy, I don't know if over there or not, you can still buy airfare here. Even if they're shutting down some of the travel, you can still buy airfare for the future, and it is dirt cheap right now to buy an airline ticket, you know, for say this summer or this fall. I don't know if that's the same situation over there, but is there anywhere you'd like to travel? What do you want to target?
Well, the big lakes are definitely high up on my list. A big tarpon would be something that I would want to do someday. But as a fanatic pike angler, I would love to travel to Mongolia or something and go for those big Amur pike. You probably have seen them as well.
Yeah, tell us about those fish.
Yeah, it's like a different strain of pike, and they look a bit, they have a different type of mark. It's like actual brown dots. They're like colored in, what do you call it? It's light brownish and then with big black or brownish dots on them. And they look completely different than the pike you find over there or here. But they don't grow as big. I mean, if you catch a 40-inch, like 1 meter plus, they are quite unique and rare over there. And they usually, they live in a big river system over there. So in Mongolia or anything in that vicinity, you can catch them. But it's increasingly difficult to catch them over there due to local population and catching them and not always doing catch and release. But it's on my list, definitely, because I do want to catch more species of pike, because pike just intrigue me.
Yeah.
Coming November, I will probably go to Italy if everything settles down with the stuff that's going on at the moment. But in Italy, they have a different strain of pike as well, with instead of dots or the markings that we see over there or here in the Netherlands or Sweden, they have long stripes. Those are really cool as well. And in Italy, you have a couple of lakes where they are quite abundant, and they can grow quite large as well. Like the 50-inch mark we talked about, they are there for
really?
Sure.
Hmm. Yeah. You brought up catfish in your neck of the woods there. What type of catfish do you guys have?
I don't know if you know them, but Welsh catfish, the humongous catfish that grow over like 2.5 meters.
Oh.
I don't know if you've seen them, but there's actually, I don't know the exact name of the YouTube channel, but there are some videos of guys sitting in a float tube fishing in France for catfish over 2 meters and using topwaters. And the only thing they do is just cast underneath the branches of trees that are hanging over the water.
Oh, sure.
And you can see the catfish coming up. You can see a catfish from 2 meters, a 2 meter long catfish coming up and just inhaling that topwater lure right in front of your float tube. And then the guy's in for the fight because you can't do anything but hold on to your rod and hopefully you won't get pulled into the water. It's insane to watch. So yeah, wow. That's really cool as well. So those catfish as well, yeah, they're upcoming in the Netherlands. I think it's due to the higher temperatures in the Netherlands. But in France and in Spain and Italy, they are super common and they are huge, like monster huge. I mean, like the monstrous sizes, they are massive. They're really massive. Yeah.
Well, we've got flatheads. We've got channel cats and flatheads here in Minnesota. And, you know, a big channel catfish is, you know, maybe, you know, 20 to 30 pounds, maybe. I mean, that's a pretty big one you might find. But flatheads, they'll get, I think that our record is around 70 pounds or something like that. So our flatheads have kind of become the big trophy catfish species for us here in the northern part of the United States. They've got some bigger blue cats down south, but that's kind of our big one. So if you come over here, we'll get you on some big flatheads. We'll get you on some 50. We've had muskies close to 60 inches, which is that 150 Ooh. Centimeter mark. So
awesome.
We've got some big musky lakes here. And then of course, you know where I go for my lake trout. So we need to get you over there.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. We need to. And the catfish you mentioned, are those the same catfish that they do the catfish grappling with? Or is that another species of catfish?
When they noodle for them?
I think, it's a noodle.
Yeah, would they just bare hand them?
Yeah, that exactly. Yeah, catfish graveling or noodling. Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are flatheads. They do that a little bit more down south than up here. But they'll go into the riverbanks and reach their hands down into the holes under the water and pull catfish out, which it's not really high on my list of things to do. Personally.
No, me neither.
But
I would rather just catch them with a rope. That's fine with me.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, man, this has been a fascinating interview. I really appreciate you coming on with us and talking about fishing on the other side of pretty much on the other side of the world, fishing over in Europe, and how different, but yet how similar. I mean, everything we talked about, there's so many similarities between fishing there and fishing here. So I would, I'd like to experience it, but, why don't you tell everybody where we can find you on all the social media, channels and platforms?
Yeah, for sure. Well, on YouTube, you can just find search for your white label fishing and you will find a series of videos. We do some explanatory videos where we explain trolling tactics with just a basic sheet of paper and some pencils and just trying to do a visual representation of the techniques that we use. But mostly we just post videos about our fishing experience, trying to find the balance between entertaining and sharing the most information we can share. And on Instagram, obviously, at Sean with an L. And then I try to post regular posts about the fish that we caught or like unique fish over the years that, and some short videos and clips as well. We do a lot of underwater footage with cameras trying to capture the underwater strikes of pike and other species as well, which is fun to do and especially very, very insightful as well. You learn a lot about pike behavior when you use those cameras. So that's fun to use as well. We post some clips on Instagram and on the YouTube channel, obviously, as well. So you can find us on social media there, or me on social media there.
I've been using those underwater cameras too. I would like to see an improvement in quality in the underwater cameras,
yep.
But because we do a lot of that, and you really need to have clear water. You know, a lot of our lakes aren't clear enough here in Minnesota. We get up into northern Minnesota, up into Canada, and you get some of that deep, cold, clear water. And we can see at Tazen up there, we can see 30 feet down on a sunny day, just with the naked eye. So I can run one of those cameras down to 60 feet. One of those water wolf inlines down to 60 feet and still get strikes. So 60 feet, what's that? 20 meters, probably approximately, yeah. And still get pretty good light penetration down there. So, it's so cool. And it's amazing. You know, I remember fishing, I'll just say this here before we wrap up. I remember fishing for lake trout up there one day and you can troll shoreline and you could catch 100 lake trout in a day. I mean, they might, you know, they won't be, you know, world records or anything, but you can catch 100, you know, 2 to 10 pounders in a day. And, we went about a half hour without catching a fish. And there was two of us fishing in the boat, Plus one of the owners, we were doing some filming, some underwater filming, actually, just trying to get some fish strikes, some lake trout strikes and some pike. And we went a half hour without catching a fish. And we all looked at each other like, what is going on? And it was kind of windy and rainy and kind of cold. You know, it was kind of a cold front that had moved through. So we're like, man, the fish are just must be kind of shut off right now. And I went back and watched that footage. And for the entire 30 minutes, there's at least one lake trout within a few centimeters of that hook, just following it back and forth the entire time. And every once in a while, when the, you know, I think I had a spoon on, when it would wiggle to the right, that fish would come up and try to eat it and miss it to the left. So I don't think lake trout's eyesight is the best, and they're obviously turned off a little bit. But there was at least one, sometimes two fish following that the entire 30 minutes. So it's just amazing to be able to see into that other world under the surface to realize when fishing is bad, it doesn't mean that there aren't fish there all the time. It allows you to kind of learn their behavior and go, okay, well, let's try this, or let's try something like this, try something a little bit different. But it was pretty cool to see that they were there the whole time.
Yeah, it's super insightful. And I've learned from it by seeing fish in certain spots, because I could match the time when I started recording and the time in the video that it happened. So I could actually see where that fish actually was moving around. So yeah, it's very learned. You know, you can learn a lot from those videos. But imagine how we used to do it back in the days. I mean, I know a couple of guys that recorded some of the earliest underwater footage, and there was one camera guy operating the camera, one guy operating the boat, one guy fishing, and the other guy was just constantly managing the distance between the camera and the lure. It was a four-man setup to actually get some footage. And nowadays, you just put on a small camera just in front of your lure, and then you can record for 4 hours straight away. It's one of the more amazing things that technology has offered us in the past few years.
Well, I need to get better about tracking where I'm at when I'm using one of those underwater cameras, because obviously the camera's underwater. When you're looking at footage, you don't always know where you were on that lake. And Sean, I got a video from Tazen Lake that I'm working on right now that I'm going to be putting out here hopefully in a couple of weeks, where I came across, my camera actually hit an old wooden boat that had sunk somewhere on the lake. And we think it's out in front of the lodge, but I was going through footage, and all of a sudden, sure enough, the camera bumps into an old boat that had sunk out there. And then I spent the next 2 weeks up there trying to find it again. And that's what this new video that's coming out is kind of about, is a lot of the underwater stuff and searching for one of these old boats that we think is probably about 50 to 60 years old. So it should be pretty interesting. Anyway,
super interesting. Looking forward to it.
All right, man. I appreciate the time. Good luck over there. Good luck with everything that's going on. Stay safe, stay healthy. I hope all your friends and family are healthy, and good luck fishing this season. And thanks for the time here on the radio show.
It was a pleasure. So thank you for having me. And same to you. Good luck out there. Stay safe. And hopefully this will all pass by, and we can look at it as one of the memorable things that happened in 2020, for sure.
We're going to learn from it, that's for sure. And so, for sure, social distancing, you got a big enough boat, you could probably stay 6 feet away from the other guy in the boat, right?
yeah, exactly. You have to.
Absolutely.
There's no way around. But I think the boat is one of the safest places you can be at the moment. So, it's a good excuse to go fishing.
That's right. All right, Sean Witt, thanks for the time on Sporting Journal Radio.
Thanks a lot, man.
Sporting Journal Radio is a division of Macaba Media, LLC. Find us online at sportingjournalradio.com to listen to past shows, download the podcast, and more. And search for Sporting Journal Radio on Facebook and Instagram for outdoor videos, tips from the experts, and more. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for listening to Sporting Journal Radio. We'll see you next week.